WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Charlottesville residents and activists express anger not just over last month's violence, but ongoing conditions for the city's poor as council votes to remove another Confederate statue. Virginia's economy will take a big hit as DACA is rescinded. And local photographer Howard Zayer revisits prisoners doing life. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, September 6th. Good morning.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from Blue Ridge Community College. When you earn a two-year associate degree, transferring to a four-year college is possible through their guaranteed transfer agreement programs. More information at brcc.edu.
Charlottesville City Council Tuesday night moved forward with plans to remove the city's Stonewall Jackson statue, but not before catching an earful from a crowd angry not just about the white supremacist rally on August 12th, but about something deeper. WMRA's Jordy Yeager has more.
Affordable housing, racial disparities in foster care, a living wage. For 2 hours on Tuesday night, area residents voiced their dissatisfaction with city leadership. Nikiah Walker, a city council candidate running as an independent in November, said the frustration goes beyond this summer's events.
So when you talk about white privilege and white supremacy and why Charlottesville is ground zero and why things erupted the way they did, is because of the power dynamics that we have in this town that has been under liberal and democratic control, right? You all have participated in that establishment.
More than 150 area residents joined Walker to demand action for the city's poorest and most disenfranchised. Amid calls for Mayor Mike Signer and Councilor Kathy Galvin to step down, councilors apologized on Tuesday for failing their constituents. Vice Mayor Wes Bellamy said that for too long, white supremacy in Charlottesville has hidden behind polite liberal decorum.
I understand exactly where y'all are coming from, because a lot of you are saying things that make very clear sense, and we refuse to empathize, we refuse to understand, we refuse to even talk about it.
Later in the evening, councilors voted to remove the Jackson statue if a pending lawsuit challenging the removal of a Robert E. Lee statue is decided in the city's favor. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
Also, the head of an independent review of Charlottesville's handling of the protests over Confederate monuments in July and August has set up a website and tip line for people to provide information about those violent incidents. Timmy Heafy is a former U.S. attorney for the Western District of Virginia. He said at a news conference Tuesday that his review team has set up a website where residents can submit information about the incidents, including the rally in August in which Charlottesville resident Heather Heyer was killed. The web address is charlottesvilleindependentreview.com. President Trump's decision to rescind the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program will have major consequences for Virginia's economy. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has this look at the numbers.
Young people with DACA status in Virginia contribute more than $700 million to Virginia's economy annually, according to the Commonwealth Institute. Chad Stewart is a research assistant there, and he says the loss of DACA status would be a personal tragedy for the thousands of young Virginians, but he said it would also be a major hit to Virginia's economy.
DACA residents in Virginia pay a higher effective tax rate in state and local taxes than the top 1% of households in the state. So these are major contributors to the economy.
And a broad cross-section of immigrants will be hit by Trump's decision. Sukyong Oh, Together We Build America's Future, says it's far more wide-ranging than most people think.
When folks think about immigration, they often think of Latinos. What they don't think of, or maybe they're not aware of, is how even in the Asian American community, we have people who are undocumented, people who we love and care about.
Researchers at the Commonwealth Institute estimate that about 17 immigrants will lose their job every day as the permits expire. Those workers pay about $35 million in state and local taxes every year. That's money that will evaporate when they return to the shadows. I'm Michael Pope.
The check you cut for college each year is likely more expensive than the last. Both major party candidates for governor in Virginia say it's important to keep costs down and predictable, but they have different ideas about how to do that. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain explains.
Democrat Ralph Northam is suggesting a four-year tuition promise. William and Mary already does something similar.
We're telling them in advance, this is what it's going to cost you as a freshman, but also what it's going to cost you for the next 4 years.
Sam Jones is William & Mary's Senior Vice President for Finance and Administration.
You're seeing a higher sticker price, but then you're able to say early on, is that William & Mary degree going to be worth that or not?
In order to guarantee the same rate, William & Mary has to hedge its bets, meaning slightly higher tuition. It's also feasible because more than 80% of students there graduate within 4 years, though the statewide average is much lower. Republican Ed Gillespie is proposing something different to stabilize prices, a savings account schools can tap into during tough budget years. Peter Blake is with the State Council for Higher Education.
That could be beneficial to control some of the ups and downs that we see in tuition and in general fund reductions that we've experienced over the last several years.
That idea has made its way through the legislature before, but there's been little appetite for funding it. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
Finally today, a recent report by the Sentencing Project says that nearly one in every seven people in prison is serving what effectively amounts to a life sentence. 20 years ago, a book of photos and interviews of nearly 60 lifers in Pennsylvania prisons, where a life sentence really means a life sentence, gave some rare insight into their lives and thoughts. This year, the author of that book, who now lives in Rockingham County, is reconnecting with some of those same people. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz reports.
It's been a quarter of a century since Broadway resident Howard Zehr interviewed and photographed the subjects for what became his 1996 book, Doing Life, Reflections of Men and Women Serving Life Sentences. He's been revisiting about 24 of these men and women in preparation for a follow-up, which he's calling Coping with Life. They've been joyous reunions, he said, but they've also made him very sad when he tries to imagine what it must be like. Zehr recorded his interviews.
How do you describe a life sentence today? You remember I asked you how you would describe it 25 years ago. How would you describe it today? Everybody I've ever asked says, whew, first.
Yeah, I don't know if I even have any reference to compare it to, because I've been here so long.
Been so long, yeah.
I mean, McDonald's wasn't even open for breakfast when I came to jail.
Marilyn Dobrolensky has been in prison since 1972 and has kept herself occupied painting with watercolors, welding, training dogs. She's in the process of filing for commutation.
So I'm trying not to get my hopes up to have them let down again, because I don't know, at this age, that would go over very well.
How old are you?
I'll be 65 this year.
Yeah, I thought maybe, yeah.
Zehr is known as the grandfather of restorative justice, which considers the needs of victims in the justice process and focuses on repairing the harms of crime. He wanted his book, Doing Life, to offer an opportunity to see offenders as individuals with their own fears and dreams, rather than stereotypes. Zehr hopes that this sequel collection, Coping with Life, will show how people endure, find meaning in, and even transcend being in prison for life.
They're trying to restory their lives. They're trying to incorporate what happened into their lives. I've often talked about that with crime victims, but it's also true with people who commit crimes. And I saw that clearly in Harry Twiggs, for instance, trying to reconcile the terrible guy that he was, as he readily admits, with who he is now today. And you can't just say these are two different, absolutely different people. And the way it's often done is by saying that prepared me and gave me the insights that I can now use, that made me who I am and I can now use to help others.
Here's Harry Twiggs, a lifer that Zehr said is using his past to help others.
One of the counselors told me, she said, your problem is not drugs and alcohol or crime. She said, your problem is you. You have a Harry Twiggs problem. I'm trying to make up. You know what I mean? For all the years and the pain and the suffering and stuff that I've caused people. When I was out there, I was in the way. Now I'm able to show people that's trying to find their way, I can show them.
Kimberly Joins is another person who tries to support others in facing adversity. She works as a certified peer specialist with younger women in prison.
What would you say today if you were describing a life sentence? How would you describe it?
Oh, boy. I've been thinking about this for a long, long time. The good thing about it is the joy I receive from helping myself and others. The bad part about it is the negativity. You have to fight with every fiber of your being to be constructive. It's just heart-wrenching to see so many people that really had to live pillar to post. I extend my compassion and my comfort in the best way I can to help them realize there is so much. Let me see a better way to phrase it. It's so much more joy than there is hardship. You just have to come to a point in your life where you believe goodness feels better than the pain you've endured.
Zare doesn't know yet whether this collection, Coping with Life, will end up as an exhibit or a book, but he is sure that if he were to be photographed in a prison setting, he'd look like a prisoner too. That's why in his photography, he uses a plain backdrop.
I want you to confront the person, what they look like, what their eyes are saying, what they're saying with their voice, and not have other things to make judgments with.
However it takes shape, Zare's result will be a glimpse inside, into the people who are living, likely for the rest of their lives, behind fences and locked gates, and, for those of us on the outside, maybe even into our own expectations of the criminal justice system. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
Learn more and to see some of Howard Zare's photos at WMRA.org. Don't forget to show your support also for WMRA today at WMRA.org or through the WMRA app. With your contribution during our fall More News, Less Noise fundraiser. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for joining me, and thanks for your support. And enjoy your Wednesday.